Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
This is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and you are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on Blog Talk Radio. This is Tuesday, December 17th, 2013, at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Of course, I welcome your calls and questions, so please call in at 914-338-0695, and I'll take questions at the end of the program. Tonight's topic is, you cannot steal health. There's a romantic notion, fable, about Robin Hood stealing from the rich to feed the poor. Unfortunately, this has shaped public policy in the United States. This theory has been applied to health care since the inception of Medicaid. It has resulted in poverty for those who were robbed and no improved health for the recipients of this system. And today, I clarify why taxing one person for another person's health can never work and, of course, what the natural solutions would be. Now, I know a lot of people have questions about reception from time to time. There is a concurrent recording going on of absolutely perfect quality so that if there is an issue with sound, you will have a very clear recording by the end of the week. So we're trying to get that done by the end of the week. Hopefully, that won't be necessary. Now, I will be continuing my radio show here on Blog Talk, but also I will be starting a new radio show on RBN, Republic Radio. Okay, so back to this topic. Now, I thought I was going to tell you about how maybe money couldn't buy health, or maybe we could help poor people another way, but I was absolutely shocked, as always, at what I found. First of all, money cannot buy health. And health is actually an inside job. It's something that nobody can do for you. So many, this is why being wealthy is not necessarily associated with being healthy, because it's not a question of money. It's often a question of personal habits, discipline. Now you can spend money maybe to these things are so low that even the ultra-poor can afford them. So because it's an inside job, only your acts or your behavior can make you healthy. Nobody can do it for you. And this is also why, I know when I was a kid, I'm 56 years old now, but when I was a young kid, the old-timers always associated poor health with immoral failure, with someone's lack of character. This made no sense to me at all because, of course, I was going to government schools, which proposed that any health affliction you have was due to bad luck, unknown causes, of course, an infection. So nobody can buy it for you. For example, basically it's what you spend your money on that makes you ill. And this is why the prisoner is always healthier than a jailer. Why? Because the jailer, of course, has an unlimited amount of food to eat. And some notable wealthy people have failed to thrive despite their wealth, namely Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, Jim Belushi, Elvis Presley. And probably you might even have a cancer patient down the street who's receiving very expensive care and not doing very well. So health care is actually a chance. If you talk to your doctor, they'll tell you that. Well, Mr. Jones, your chances of heart attack are blah, blah, blah. And if we give you this drug, your chances will reduce. And so you're still buying basically a gambling ticket. And so there's not, gambling is gambling. It's whether you're gambling with someone else's money, of course, it makes you more free with your gambling, but it is still gambling. So theft, let's talk about theft. Theft is taking someone else's money without their consent. That's wrong. That's called stealing. And Obamacare or Affordable Health Care Act, we know the money is being taken without the individual's consent because there's a penalty for people who say no. So it is definitely a form of theft. No question about it. But there's another hack going on here. This money is being stolen. It's being used to pay for something that the recipients cannot or unwilling to pay for on their own. That would be bad enough. But the real culture here is it's not even effective. So if you're a poor person, your choice is between buying health care or paying rent, most people pay it. Why? Because they know that if they pay the rent, they will certainly have a place to stay, but if they spend the money on health care, it may or may not be beneficial. And there's a good chance that it would be harmful. And more to the point, a dollar spent on health care will not return to the individual, whether they're poor or not, will not translate into a dollar worth of better health, ability to go to work, ability to earn more money. A dollar spent on health care doesn't translate into a dollar's worth of energy to enjoy happiness or enjoy life. So what you have going on then is you're taking money from an individual who's unwilling to work with it, taking their money, a dollar, let's call it a dollar bill, you're giving it to someone else. And that dollar bill is not even benefiting the recipient a full dollar. So you have deterioration of value going on. And so you're taking a dollar from one person to provide to the second person something they don't even value at a dollar. When I say they don't value it at a dollar, if they had the cash in their hands, they might decide to do something else with it besides paying for medical care. For example, if you have a woman facing a hysterectomy and she knows, the doctor knows, everybody knows she's going to live just fine without this hysterectomy, and you say to her, I will hand you the cash for the hospital bill, the doctor bill, the anesthesia bill, and all associated in any costs, bundle it up, call it $10,000. I will give you this $10,000. You decide if you want to keep the money or have that surgery. There would be a lot fewer hysterectomies. I'm not saying everybody would refuse, but there would be a lot fewer hysterectomies. And this is the economic gravity of stealing money from someone who presumably is not poor. We'll get to that point in a minute. Presumably someone who is not poor and spending it in a way that even the poor person does not value at the dollar amount of the contribution. So that's huge. Now, the other issue is the whole transition. Now, when Robin Hood and his merry men decide to rob wealthy to give the money to the poor, I will bet you, I wasn't there, but not every dollar got to the poor. I will bet you that Robin Hood and his merry men kept a chunk of change for themselves. This is another serious issue. So when you're taking money from one person to give it to a second person, the first person, first of all, has never met the second person, which means they cannot verify that the second person got that money. And so this whole system then becomes rife for incredible fraud and abuse. I can only speak about New York State because that's where I hail from. So it became public in New York State. This is in the year 2001, 2002. We have a Medicaid program. And for those of you who don't know, Medicaid is paid part by feds and part by taxes collected by the state. Each state can determine how it collects these taxes. And so in New York State, they decided that they would expand their Medicaid program, this is way back when, to include nursing home care for the elderly poor. And so what this public document indicated, actually it was an article in one of those newspapers that prints what nobody wants printed, was that the governor had his brother create a corporation. They designated it as a nursing home. They just poured tens of millions of dollars into it. No, there was no bill. No, there were no people being cared for. Money was just shoveled in. This was the person can enjoy better health. So is there an insurance program that pays for organic, locally grown food, free of chemicals, fertilized with compost, and not chemicals? Does the insurance pay for this? So the first component of health mentions dehydration. Second component is clean food. And now in 2013, our term clean food is organic, locally grown, free of chemicals, fertilized with compost, free of pesticides. Okay. Next thing that makes people healthy is parasite treatments. Taking regular parasite treatments. You deworm your dog, guess what? People are no different. They need to be dewormed and parasites gotten rid of. Is that part of any health program or insurance program? No. And next, you have things like regular bowel movements. What does it take to get a regular bowel movement? Well, sometimes it takes more things than others, more effort than others. But are there insurance companies that pay for colonics, enemas, dietary necessities to regulate people's bowels? Is there an insurance company that pays for 30 minutes a day of leisurely walking? Do any insurance plans include any of these things which fundamentally are necessary to create health? The answer is no. So if the health insurance program, affordable care included, does not pay for any of the essentials that lead to health, then it can be sensibly concluded that having health care insurance and having access to health care cannot be expected to produce health. And guess what? It turns out it doesn't. And this is why taking money from one group to another can never produce health in the population that received the money. Now, that happens is when you transfer this money from the one population, let's say the have, to the other population, let's call them the have-nots, let's take a look and see if that's really what's happening. Let's take a look at these taxes that go to pay for health care. Who is paying these taxes? Let's take a look at this. It turns out in New York State, I can speak for New York State because I'm from New York State, the taxes to pay for the Medicaid program come from sales taxes. So if you buy something, it gets taxed, then that is what funds the state's portion of Medicaid. So it comes from sales taxes. It comes from the general revenue, so when people pay their state sales taxes, it comes from there. And a portion comes from property taxes, care for the poor. In other words, this is public health clinics where they issue birth control and where they issue free prenatal care. So these things, these are the sources. So who pays property taxes? I would suggest that by and large, the poor pay property taxes. And they pay property taxes at a much, much higher rate. For example, if you live in New York State and you're wealthy enough to own a home, then you have a property tax exemption. So if a home is not owner-occupied, rental property, let's say, it's taxed at a much higher rate. And who lives in rental property? These very same have-nots that we're ostensibly trying to help. And so the landlord, his only source of income is the tenants. And so if you're raising the property taxes preferentially on landlords, then the property taxes are going to be preferentially placed or burdened on the poor. The very ones who are supposed to be benefiting from this program are the ones more heavily taxed to pay for it. So it's really not benefiting them. It's causing many of them actually to be evicted from their rental properties because they can't afford the rent because their property taxes are so much higher than, the, say, if the person could afford to own a home. So you have the middle class, we'll say middle class, upper middle class, who can afford homes, they're in homes. But the poor, they're not. They're basically renters. And so they disproportionately bear that burden. Also, the sales tax, again, a burden disproportionately borne by the people who consume things day to day. So the taxes, even though it appears that the have-nots are being taxed, I mean, the haves are being taxed to pay for the have-nots are being far, are sustaining much higher taxes because of this program than they would have if this program did not exist. So that's important. So the real person paying these taxes actually are themselves, even though, of course, the not-so-poor are annoyed by them, but, again, they're not being made homeless. So once we say it's okay to steal from another person, who can steal? Like I said, this is trickery. So we say, well, any citizen can steal from another, but that would make things unpredictable. You know, chaos, who likes chaos, anarchy, right? But what if we say the government can steal and take possessions by force? Of course they can, that's what taxes are all about. But everyone's okay with that because it's an orderly theft and it's predictable and you know how much money you pay, you know how much is going to be stolen, and so it's okay. So I'm not arguing with that, but then that invites the second level of theft, which we talked about, where the government can say, hey, I'm taking this from you to help the poor, and then never use it to help the poor. So healthcare is not a determinant of health. Never was and still isn't. And that's a serious logical flaw in this argument, that you can tax a person who has money and give that money to someone who does not have money and give it to them in the form of healthcare and it'll result in better health. It's simply absolutely not true. Now, just so you guys know, it's not a slam dunk for me. My mother totally disagrees with me. She says, Jennifer, wrong, not true. So let's take a look at Mom's medical history. She's 82. So we can take a look at her consumption of health care throughout her lifetime and how that's impacted her. Now, I have to say, my mother, even though she's African-American, came from a background where she was able to afford health care as a child, or she said her father was able to afford health care as a child. And so she had full access to health care really without economic limitation. So as a child, she had eczema. For this, she went to the doctor many, many times with no relief and paid for many, many creams. Later, as a teenager, she developed severe pain over her upper teeth and severe headaches. And on the advice of a dentist, she had all of her upper teeth pulled, only to find it was her sinuses, and she had allergies, and the pain was not improved by pulling the teeth, and it was not improved by allergy medicine. Okay, so far, Mom's consumed quite a bit of health care here, and she has not been improved and still yet to receive life-saving therapy. All right. So then Mom became pregnant with twins. Now, the twins were born. She did get prenatal care. She did go to the hospital for delivery. But both twins were mentally damaged. And she had five more children. No, excuse me. She had four more children. I was one of them. All the other children had prenatal care except me. I had no prenatal care. They were economically mom and dad at a low point, so I had no prenatal care. Mom just showed up at the hospital, and I was born within half an hour. No vaccines. They couldn't afford them. And no formula. Couldn't afford that either. So I breastfed and not vaccinated. Mom apologized to me and told me they were too poor at the time to afford all these modern medical miracles. Okay, so Mom's health plunked along, and Mom had a job, and she was working, and she injured her thumb. She had surgery done on her thumb. The surgery was botched, and the thumb ended up being painful for pretty much the next 20, 30 years. Then she got a yeast infection, and her gynecologist told her she needed a hysterectomy for her yeast infection, which, of course, Mom agreed to. So Mom had a hysterectomy. Now, IT standards, the hysterectomy was definitely unnecessary, but let's just say it was not life-saving. Then mom had a head-on car accident. Now, everybody tells me this is a case for health insurance if you have a car accident. Head-on car accident, and she broke some face bones, broke some knee bones. As luck would have it, she had this car accident in the Deep South. Because she was African-American, they decided they would just put her on a gurney in the back of some closet somewhere, and if she was alive by morning, they'd check her out and see what they wanted to do. That's what happened. They just put her in the back closet, and in the morning, she was still alive. And since she had three major private insurances, they put her. They decided they'd do some surgery. So they put some rusty screws in her knee, and they decided they didn't want to fix her face bones because, you know, she was black anyway and didn't look good, so they thought, and why give her plastic surgery? So now, 10 years later, she went back to another doctor because her knee pain hurt so bad. He discovered the rusty screws, took them out, and the pain went away. Okay, we might say that the care she received for the car accident was somehow appropriate or not appropriate. We can say it was not life-saving because they just put a corner and waited 16 hours. Now, mom had numerous diagnoses along her adult life for borderline hypertension, for which she was given drugs, but she had side effects, and so she stopped the drugs. So she never really had her hypertension treated, never had a cholesterol properly treated. She did have a tetanus shot that paralyzed her arm, and a flu shot that did the same. She eventually recovered the use of her arm, and now takes no vaccines. Now, she's 80 years old. At 81, she broke her hip, went to the hospital. She did get her hip repaired, and they, despite her platinum insurance, she's got incredible insurance. She pays several hundred dollars a month in addition to her Medicare to make, have this great insurance. They placed her on a special rehab program protocol to help her master the walker. Not walking independently, but the walker. And I had to call and explain to them that she needed to learn how to walk, and they needed to change her rehab program, which they did, and now she's walking without a walker. Just for anyone listening, the death rate from hip fracture is 9%. It's pretty low death, you know. That's the death rate supposedly from hip fracture. I looked at all the causes of death from hip fracture. None of them, most of them, appear to be surgical complications. Now, during the hospital stay, she received many drugs that made her incontinent and fragile, incontinent and forgetful. And so now she's 8 years old. And the question is, assumption, and mom's received, as you can, medical, you know, history, tremendous amount of medical care. Is there any medical intervention she received during the course of her 82 years here on Earth that could have reasonably been argued that it increased her life expectancy? And the answer is no. Even the hip, she had the hip fracture at age 81 years old. Life expectancy in the United States is 9. So even if she died at that point, again, she'd already reached life expectancy as a U.S. citizen. So one really cannot make an argument, even looking over mom's extensive history of medical consumption, every step of the way advised by doctors, I might add, that any of it was beneficial to her in terms of helping her live longer. It just wasn't. And it's the same with Medicaid. Now, mom had, you know, platinum insurance, private insurance, or she paid cash. And we can expect that an impoverished person probably no better care. If I get worse, it wouldn't get any better. And so this is a long litany of cases where the health care did not, it was not any benefit to her. Never mind, it was easily, you know, $90,000 medical care over the course of her lifetime, easily. That's in like $13. Let me give you another example, because everyone knows I'm down here in Panama. And so there are a lot of people down here who are Americans who have received, you know, very good health care. One particular person, he and his wife owned a construction business down here. His wife is Hispanic, which means basically she speaks the language and she does a lot of the administrative stuff. He has a technical skill, which is he knows about building things and how to build them. And so together they have this incredible, thriving business. Well, he decided to get a checkup, and the doctor told him he had prostate cancer. And he weighed his odds, and he researched, and he read, and he got second opinions and third opinions. Excuse me, and he finally settled on getting the seed implants. These are radioactive seeds. They put in a man's prostate, which literally radiates radioactivity and shrivels up his prostate and a few other nearby organs. It absolutely destroyed, I do mean destroyed, his sex life and his marriage and his business. So receiving this medical care totally destroyed him financially, personally, and even physically. And this is a case where $10,000 worth of medical care did easily $100,000 worth of damage. And this is what is happening with the Affordable Care Act, is that we are taking care, health care that is economically devastating and from a health standpoint devastating, and we are harming people once by taxing them and again by paying for this dangerous consumer item. Now, another example of health care and its impact on human beings is when I was in medical practice, I had a patient who was pregnant, and she was having preterm labor at 18 weeks gestation. And if you know, 40 weeks is full term. And so she wanted to have this baby, but the doctor told her she needed to go on bed rest for absolutely the rest of her pregnancy. And she was breadwinner in the family. Her husband had a job, but he didn't earn enough money to make the house payment. And so they were facing losing the house and being homeless before the baby was even born. So they came to me. Now, the other doctor in the standard of care, that was the standard of care, by the way. And so I listened to their story and realized that they had at least $30,000 on the line here. And I said, well, this is what you do. Change your diet, do this, do that. It took about 18 hours and all of her interactions stopped. She came back to the office and said, how do I get back to work? What do I tell my other doctor to get back to work? So I told the other doctor what the doctor wanted here, and she got back to work, finished out her pregnancy working, had a health baby, kept her home. So had she received the standard of care, which is what the Affordable Care Act plans to pay for, it would have left her and her at the time, three children, homeless. This is the devastation that the standard of care is wreaking in people's lives. And, of course, what I provided was not the standard of care, but it was helpful, did help her get back on track. So let's talk about these people who are poor. Who are they, and what are we talking about here? Well, first of all, the poverty level for 2013 is $25,000 a year for a family of four. Now, for most of us, that might seem like a bit of a harsh budget, but let's dig deeper into this. So that there are 9.5 million households in the United States that meet this definition of earning $25,000 per year or less for a family of three. What's a family of four? What's a family of four? We're talking about a mother and three children, or adult children, or two adult, two children. That's what we're talking about. Now, I had to find a number, and the number I wanted to find out is how much is being spent every year in Medicaid. This is medical care for the poor. Now, I'm not counting the Medicare payments that go to Medicare recipients who are poor. That'd be an even bigger number. Let's just talk about the Medicaid outlays 2011. This is the latest you could get figures for. $432 billion. Turns out if you take $432 billion and you divide it by $9.5 million, then on a per household basis, the Medicaid program is taking away from people $45,600 per impoverished household. But wait, the poverty level is $25,000. $25,000 plus $45,000, that's $70,000 a year they would have if we just handed them the cash. And then let them decide if they will spend that money on health care. So just taking the Medicaid money and distributing it to those people who we're calling poor will eliminate poverty. We wouldn't need any more poverty programs. We've already won it. But what else would happen? These people would have, they would have the choice of taking that $45,000 and buying some organic vegetables, skipping their vaccines, buying some vitamins. That's a lot of vitamins. You could spend $500 of vitamins every month and still wouldn't go broke. Drinking more water, cleaner water, doing colonics, cleansing, whatever they wanted to do along those lines, and they could put together a darn good healing program for $45,600 each year per household. That's a pretty darn good impact. So the problem then is this $45,600 per household, this is just Medicaid. We don't talk about subsidized after-school programs or any other war on poverty programs. We're just talking about what's the return on investment for a person at a low poverty line for $45,600. If you hand $45,600, I think any poor person would manage to get some benefit from that. Maybe, you know, say spend a few on some luxuries like anyone earning $70,000 a year would. But they would spend some, I'll bet you dollars or donuts, on something healthy. Even if they didn't, you know, the government could put a little brochure, or forget the government, private citizens who are being taxed for this money could write up a brochure saying, hey, you know, here's some suggestions on how to spend that $45,000 so you can really get healthy. And then if a doctor wanted to take care of these people, or if they wanted to take care, they could go to the doctor and say, you know, I have $45,600. What are you going to do for me? Can we negotiate a price reduction? Oh, no? Well, geez, I'm sorry, we have a family vacation planned. We're going to spend this money on our family vacation, and we think that's going to bring us a fair amount of happiness, free of stress, and that will improve our health. And so people get to really exert their idea of what is good health. Now, the issue is, what is poverty, overstating poverty? This, to me, was shocking, because I'm sure many of you people, like me, when I think poverty, I think, oh, my God, people are going hungry. People don't have enough money for food. Poverty, oh, no, people don't have a place to stay. Oh, my God, poverty, it's cold up there in Syracuse. There must be people who don't have enough money for heat or a warm boat. That's poverty. That's what I thought poverty was, but you know what? Not everybody knows everything, and sometimes you're just not right. So that is not poverty. That is not the definition of poverty in the United States. And so I think it's important for us to understand what is poverty. What they're saying is poverty is the poverty lines is that it's failure to keep up with the Joneses. If you don't earn enough money to live to the standard of living that your neighbor is living at, then you are poor. This, to me, was news. So let me try and read the definition of poverty. This is from the, it's from Wikipedia, but it's from the .gov sources. Okay, some critics point out that stated poverty lines in countries with substantial welfare systems, like the United States, fail to count in-country transfers when calculating a poverty threshold. For example, a parent pays a rent on an apartment for an adult son directly to the apartment owner instead of giving the money to the son to pay the rent, then that money does not count as income to the son. So if a church or nonprofit organization gives food to an elderly person, the value of the food does not count as income to the elderly person. Also, if a person has a garden and they grow food from the garden, that food they get from the garden is not counted as income. If people do anything, address any of their needs in a non-financial way, the fact that those needs are met does not contribute to their wealth, or prosperity. The official poverty measure counts only monetary income. And so it considers anti-poverty programs are not income, like food stamps, housing assistance, earned income, tax credit, Medicaid, and school lunches. But I'd like to say, I think if you take a poor person who's at zero, and you hand them $45,000 and say, hey, feed yourself on this, pay some rent on this, they could easily manage the whole ball of wax. I was just seeing a guy on the phone the other day, lives in Idaho, pays $135 a month rent. I think it's outstanding. More people should move to Idaho. The other thing, though, is that studies measure the difference between the income of people and their neighbors. And so one example is that a person earning $100,000 a year living in a neighborhood where most other people earn $500,000 a year would be considered to be poor. And so what they're saying then is poverty means that a person is not able to live an authentic life and circulate in the same social services circles with their neighbors. And I was just absolutely floored by this. So it turns out that people can have adequate food, clothing, and shelter and still be classified as poor. Also, the $25,000 was going to, you know, help people with their, you know, basic needs. But they're saying, no, it's more than that. So now they're saying absolute poverty is the absence of any two of the following eight basic needs. Food. So body mass index, so if you're skinny, if you're you know, more than 10% underweight. Safe drinking water. I would say everyone in the United States drinking water does not have safe drinking water. Forget that one. Sanitation facilities, toilets, latrines must be accessible in or near their home. Most U.S. homes have that. Health treatment must be received for serious illness and pregnancy. Well, a lot of people choose not to receive treatment for a pregnancy. They choose to have their babies at home. So between the tap water and having the baby at home, this person, even if they were wealthy, would be poor. You know, I worked as a doctor, and I was earning between $135,000 and $200,000 a year. I was poor, and I didn't know it because I had my third baby at home, refused self-treatment for that. It's like, nah, I'm not going to do that. And we had tap water in the house, which, of course, was definitely not safe, although I did buy a water filter of some sort. But so I had unsafe drinking water and no health care for my pregnancies. That would make me below the poverty line. So shelter, homes must have fewer than four people living in each room. Okay, we got that. Education, everyone must attend school or otherwise learn to read. Okay, my kids were homeschooled, didn't attend school. You guys getting the picture here. Everyone must have access to radios, televisions, computers, or telephones at home. We definitely failed the radio, television, and computer test for many years. And then access to services, I'm not sure what that is. Legal, social, financial, credit services, I had no access to credit. Well, I did manage to get a loan from my office, but when it came down to trying to borrow money for a house, they said, no, we're not going to lend money for a house in that neighborhood. So you see then that the criteria for poverty could easily fit a thinking human being who chooses to set personal responsibility for their health. For example, if you have a composting toilet, because you believe in being friendly to the earth, so a composting toilet would qualify you as not having sanitation facilities. If you choose to heal naturally at home and not accept treatment for what others perceive as a serious illness or a pregnancy, again, you're below the poverty line. And if you decide to accept responsibility for educating your children, again, you're below the poverty line. This is absolutely shocking. And if you decide you're not going to allow propaganda in your home in the form of newspapers, radios, televisions, computers, or telephones. Actually, we did have a telephone. We had none of the other things. In fact, my kids were playing with the other kids outside one time, and they were asking my son, hey, did he see XYZ or whatever it was on TV? He says, oh, no, we don't have a television. The kid says, you what? You don't have a television? Oh, what? That's child abuse. You can report your mother for that. You? Oh, my God. Oh, is she the doctor, too? Oh, you got to have a TV. Thank God my kids did not report me. But that was quite an event. So this is a serious matter that what we're doing then is we're saying we have to spend $45,000 a year, tax a population, so $45,000 per year can be spent making sure that poor people have access to a service, in this case health care, that's going to make them more poor, actually damage their health. And worse yet, we don't even know that they're receiving the full $45,000. There's evidence that a lot of it is being kept. When I say kept, I mean simply pocketed at some level in the political chain. So this is really a shocking thing. But the important take-home message here is you absolutely cannot purchase good health. It's not for sale. I get emails all the time from people saying, my health is lousy, everything's going awful, what's going on? I drink my full 2 cups of water a day. Stop right there. It's not going to happen. You're not going to get healthy. You're not going to heal unless you drink the water, and nobody can drink it for you. If you're eating food that's poisoned and contaminated, you're not going to get healthy. There's no way. No one can do it for you. You've got to make an effort to access clean food. These are just things that an individual has to do. And every single epidemic in history, every single mass outbreak of illness has been traced back to epidemiological hygienic factors. In other words, contaminated water, mass vaccination, mass malnutrition, as in the introduction of milled flour or white flour in the United States, with the associated vitamin nutrition deficiencies. This is why we have enriched wheat flour and enriched pasta. It's another scandal we can talk about on another show. But this is what creates good health. Healthcare does not create good health. It's not designed to, number one. But number two, it doesn't and it can't. It's like relying on the police to lower crime. They can't. Because you call the police and after the crime's created, right? That's the way that works. Healthcare is the same way. Healthcare is provided after the person is ill. So then you can't administer healthcare in order to make a population healthier. It's simply not possible because it's not designed that way. So what's the natural way out of this? First of all, the thing that absolutely shocked me is I had no idea that I was living in, this is defined as absolute poverty. Absolute poverty is deficiency in these particular areas. And when I went to medical school, I was eating every other day because I looked at my budget and I realized I could not afford to eat every day. I didn't realize I was poor. I just figured, oh, this is all the money I have. And if I eat every other day, then my money will last. It'll work out. But here, I didn't realize that was a criteria for poverty. Of course, I didn't have safe drinking water back then either, so there you go. I fit two of the criteria for absolute, and the word is absolute. And it's also called extreme poverty. So people can be living in absolute poverty, extreme poverty, and be pretty darn healthy, as a matter of fact. I know I was as healthy as any other of my classmates in medical school. In fact, they marveled at my good health. But I digress. So how do you manage to set this thing right from a natural point of view? The simplest thing from a natural point of view is if being healthy is what you're trying to do, then health insurance of any kind is not the way to go. And if the government chooses to tax you for health insurance, And I would say it's bad enough to pay the tax, but don't consume the poison. Reminds me of a, this is really hip, and I learned a big lesson from this. The whole family was in Toronto. We were vacationing. I was a little kid. I was only like 9 years old. And so we're at this restaurant, and everyone ordered whatever it was they wanted, and we're eating, getting ready to leave. And Mom had not finished her plate, and she was picking at her food. And so my father said, what's the matter? She says, well, I don't like the food. He said, what's wrong with this? I think it's a little spoiled. She says, well, why are you eating it? He says, well, I don't want you to waste your money. Well, my father was totally irritated, and he said, Lil, her name's Lilia, Lil, it's bad enough they got our money. Don't let them take your health, too. And so it is with health insurance, it's bad enough they have your money. Don't let them take your health, too. So if you feel obligated for some reason to pay for health insurance, for Christ's sake, use it. But don't submit it. So that's number one. Number two is to, you know, if you are already into the system, if you realize you got a lot of health insurance but not much health, then shoot Gabriel an email, with Discovery Session in the speak line. And, you know, see about my program where I help you, you know, one-on-one and see if we can't get you some better help this year than what you had last year. But you need to take action. So the first action is to drink water. If you're trying to heal, distilled water. If you're healthy, trying to stay healthy, then you can drink distilled water with minerals added, or you can drink water with a gravity ceramic filter and minerals added. So that's water. Clean food, I'm telling you, it's getting so bad. You might as well just buy some organic beans and sprout them. You know, use part of them raw as a salad, use the other part, cook them to mix other stuff. And as far as meat goes, hopefully where you live they have an ordinance you can raise chickens out back and eat their eggs. It turns out that boneless, skinless chicken is a serious threat to the health of citizens. Why? Because you're missing the two most important parts of the chicken. The bones, which give you mineral nutrients when boiled for a long period of time, and also have the cartilage. And the skin, same thing, boiled for long periods of time, which helps you repair your organs. But instead, people are buying this boneless, skinless stuff, and so they're missing the building blocks they need to repair themselves. So that's the food issue. Don't eat processed food. And a lot of times you can look at food and not even tell that it's processed. Next is bowel movement. You got to move that waste out. Vitality Capsules at vitalitycapsules.com, or you can do enemas, you know, using warm, purified water, or you can use psyllium husk. Just make sure you drink lots of water, about a pint per tablespoon. Flush yourself out. Boil prunes, all kinds of things. In fact, you can get my famous boiled prune recipe in my cookbooks, Recipes for Healing. They're also available at vitalitycapsules.com. You really got to take responsibility for keeping those bowels cleaned out. In fact, I would say the one thing that's going to extend lifetime longer than anything else is keeping your bowels clean. And that's even more important than your diet. Then, of course, is also killing your parasites. My favorite is turpentine, but there's lots of other options out there. And you just have to take personal responsibility. These are all things that can turn your health around. These are all things that are not by insurance. We have a few minutes left, and I can take questions if people want to click their question button. So you have to not be the hype. You've got to have your own definition of health, and I would say even your own definition of poverty. This definition they got of poverty here is just outrageous. I think anyone who's happy and healthy and has a roof over their head and food to eat and is surrounded by people who care about them, I mean, that's a pretty good deal. And to say that you need complete access to government propaganda in order to be out of poverty, that you have to consume a government-sponsored education to be out of poverty is I think definitely a list of things concocted by the government. I mean, if that's poverty, I'll take it. Okay, we have a question here. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I wanted to ask you about the Turban Time.
Mm-hmm.
I missed that show.
Oh, we retaped it, and it's very clear. It's at vitalitycapsules.com/turpentine.
Okay, okay. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. That's a very popular show. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Yes. Your question?
Okay. Yes. Dr. Daniels, I've been searching through the Internet regarding natural health for a long time. Your story is repeated many, many times within the medical profession. And I'm wondering if you're staying in touch with some other people who have been drummed out of the United States for some of the same reasons. Have you got a network?
No, but I would like a network. I'm very interested in that. You can any information you have about other affected people, you can send it to support@vitalitycapsules.com because I think it's important for me to make contact with those people at least because a lot of them, I mean, they're absolutely devastated. And they've been totally picked up financially. They've been humiliated. They've been emotionally just crushed. And I would certainly like to let them know hope.
Yeah, one of them is right from here. She was valedictorian at the University of Washington Medical School. And she lasted, I want to say, about 7 years. And she now resides in, one of the islands and still comes back to Seattle and has a connection here where I can actually gain access to her medical experience through a contact person here who's considered a massage therapist. So
yeah,
as a massage therapist,
she
can pass on natural things. Okay.
Yeah, send me contact. That's important because I think what needs to happen is people who have had experiences similar to mine need to get together and form some kind of body of knowledge, that's available to the public. And once something like that has happened to you where the government has, really broken every law imaginable, and then people who go into medicine have utter, total, complete faith in government. That's how you get to be a doctor. You can't get to be a doctor if you're in the government. They just kind of weed you out of the process. It's a very, very damaging, devastating experience, I think, that as healers we need to not lose sight of the fact that we doctors, even though we may have been abused, are not the real target. You patients are the target. And that's really what's going on here. So if we can, arrange for the knowledge to be somehow put together and preserved, and even better than preserved, made accessible, then that's really what needs to be done. But I think that's very important to do. Well, I would say she's pretty lucky. Personally, I'm not really able to go back to the United States, but it's good that she and I think many other doctors, who have had difficulties are able to go back, and that's nice. That I think makes it easier for them to maybe visit their family and stuff. Any other questions? We have like 3 minutes left. Next week we're going to talk about natural healing myths. So myths about supplements and myths about natural healing that keep people from getting better. And that's the topic of next week's show. So please email your questions to support@vitalitycapsules.com. If there's some information you've heard about a supplement being unsafe or being dangerous, then what I'll do next week is be sure I talk about that. And maybe it's a matter of clarification as to when it is safe and when it's not safe. In any case, that is really information that people need to have so they can take charge of their health, because the only one who wants you healthy is you. There's just way too much profit for everyone else keeping you sick. Okay, so we'll see you again next. Oh, I want to announce that I am having a second show on RBN. It's going to be Sunday evening, 8 to 10 p.m. That'll be starting after the new year. So I'll be still having the show, but I'll have that show as well. Okay, thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.